Good evening, everybody. So tonight, I'm going to do a talk on verses on the faith mind, but it kind of spreads over like three sections of it. I'm going to tell you about an experience I had over the Thanksgiving holiday, and So through this experience, there were three different verses that came up. I saw this whole thing as a whole. So for Thanksgiving, we always go up to see our friends up in New Hampshire, and we spend the weekend with them. And I just love the ride. I just love being in the car, and you know, you're passing, you see this beautiful scenery. You know, sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's bucolic and quiet. Sometimes it's citified and noisy. But the thing that struck me so much is I'm sitting in the car and I'm just, the scenery is just passing. And I'm like, God, this is life. Life just keeps going. Just keeps going. It goes faster than we think, you know? There's so much going on all the time. And so I'm sitting there in the car and thinking it's like one thing after another thing after another thing. And of course my mind goes off and it's one thought after another. But after a while, I'm in this zone of watching. And my mind is very still. But there's lots of movement. So it's movement and stillness and movement and stillness and stillness and movement. And before I know it, stillness becomes movement, and movement becomes stillness, and I can't tell the difference. And now where's Michelle? She's gone, baby. It's just this. So it made me think of this line in part 11. Consider motion in stillness and stillness in motion. Both movement and stillness disappear. There's no distinguishing movement and stillness in that situation. They're just functioning as one. And this is in the Heart Sutra. Form is precisely emptiness. Emptiness is precisely form. That's what it's saying. Emptiness in form and form in emptiness. They are one. They function together. There's no separation between the two. Life is just chick, 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 chick. So as everything's going past me, the landscape and the trees and the buildings are just, now there's no definition of a tree. There's no definition of the grass. There's no definition of the building. It's just colors and shapes, colors and shapes, colors and shapes. And that's what one of the authors, Merzel, he talks about that a lot. Drop the definitions, drop the boundaries, and then you see a wider landscape, you know. And so when you're in that zone, you're not seeing separate trees. You're seeing triangles. You know, like the evergreen trees sticking up, the green triangles and brown straight lines. You know, that's it, and it's just, and this expansiveness of green, expansiveness of blue, white passing through the blue. It's just one thing. Just everything moving along. So it's kind of like when we do mindfulness practice, like brushing your teeth, cleaning the house, chopping vegetables, which I did a lot of this weekend. You know, you're just chopping, you know. And then as you're just chopping, you're focused on the chopping, you lose sight of yourself. You forget yourself. And you're just chopping. And when you forget yourself, you forget the vegetables. All there is just chopping. Emptiness. Functioning. emptiness shopping, emptiness in form. Only form can shop. You need a body to shop. You need emptiness to have the body. So when you're in the zone like that, when you're just chopping or you're just watching, you lose not only the subject object, but you also lose a sense of time and you lose a sense of space. There is no time. There is no space. You're just right there. And it doesn't matter if you focus on something small, like a vegetable or a dot on the page, or something larger, like the night sky or a vast landscape. It doesn't matter. It's all Buddha nature. It's all Buddha nature, all functioning as one. And then when you're really in it, the sense of a separate self lets go. You don't let go of it. I mean, we try to let go of it. I'm gonna let go of my borders. I'm gonna let go of myself. You can't do it. It doesn't happen like that. As I said in my first talk, you cannot use the discriminating mind to do this practice. You have to let go of the discriminating mind. Right, wrong, yes, no. Should I, shouldn't I? I have to do this. You know, you have to let it go. And that's what happened to me in the car. I just said, I'm just in the moment. Same thing with the chopping. I'm just in the moment. I'm just right there. So when you're really right there, there's no sense of a separate self. So it made me think of these lines. Emptiness here, emptiness there. But the infinite universe stands always before your eyes. Infinitely large and infinitely small. No difference. For definitions have vanished and no boundaries are seen. And that's the Heart Sutra. All things are expressions of emptiness. Everything is empty. We all are the universe, and the universe is us. We reflect each other like Indra's net of jewels. We say we're one, but if there's a one, then there must be a two and maybe more. So we say not two, which includes everything. But if nothing is excluded and there's no distinction between one and two, a true totality would be empty. It would be zero. It would be nothing. How can you count when everything's included? How can you count when everything is all intermingled and interconnected? There's no counting. And we experience that zero, that no self, when we are totally absorbed in something, when we become one with whatever we're working with, whether it's our spouse or our anger or chopping vegetables. When we become one with something, we become zero. We touch base with our true emptiness. Then we have no concept of boundaries or definitions. This is who I am. I am here holding this knife, the onion's there. And that also too, it's funny to me, because it's like emptiness here, emptiness there, emptiness everywhere. Emptiness everywhere. And in emptiness, you can't say here or there. There is no here or there. You know, we think the clock is over there, and so it's not us. It's us. It's in our consciousness. We can't separate ourselves from that clock right now unless we leave the building. And then guess what? The streetlights are you. You can't separate yourself from the streetlights. They're in your consciousness. They're there. You can't separate yourself from me right now. Oh, you lucky people. And I also realized while I was riding in the car, I had a sense of there's no fixation. You can't fix on anything. You're in the car. You're moving. You can't hold on to anything, right? And I thought, what an effing delusion it is to hold on to anything. Because guess what? As soon as you start to hold on to something, life's still moving, baby. Life is still moving. So when you start to fix on something, you're not the same person at the beginning of that fixation as you are in the middle of the fixation, as you are at the end of that fixation, because everything's moving. So to hold on to something is ridiculous. Does that make sense? It's just ridiculous. But see, we don't realize we're doing that. Because we're lost in a dream world somewhere when we're thinking about something that happened at work while we're driving the car. You know, we're in a dream world. Then we get home, we say, I don't know how I got here. How did I get home? So life passes us by while we're in this dream world. So it's just moment after moment after moment. And that's how Zen looks at life. That's how Zen looks at time. It's one moment, one moment, one moment, one moment. And each moment is total and complete as it is. And often the analogy is used of a movie, of a film, right? You have still picture. You add movement to the stillness, you got a movie. You got life. See? And the movie depends on the stills, right? Without the still pictures, you don't have a movie, right? And the still pictures depend on the movement, because without the movement, you don't have a movie, right? This is the same thing with form and emptiness. They both have their own functions, and they can't live without each other. That's why it's silly to try to separate, oh, I'm form, or I'm this, or I'm that. It's all together all the time. You know, it's like this air we're breathing. It's empty. I mean, I know some of you scientists in here are saying, well, Michelle, it's a ditch. It's oxygen and this and that and all that. Right? And you would be right on one level. But, you know, if you think of it as the sky, this is the sky right here. The sky unites us, right? We flow through the sky. We flow through the air like the clouds in the sky. You can't separate the clouds from the sky. They generate from the sky. We generate from the emptiness. How do you think we got here? So I'm going to conclude by saying it's the small mind that clings, keeps us lost in a dream world, and it's the big mind that has no time for clinging. It just keeps moving. Big mind is timeless and spaceless. Being with what is in the moment, being open and accepting, where there's no separation, not two, that's timelessness and spacelessness. And that made me think of the line in part 12, and this truth of not two, is beyond extension or diminution in time and space. It's beyond time and space, all of it. Now, I just want to say one thing. I've used words like sense of. There's a sense of this, or there's a sense of that. No sense of a separate self. You lose a sense of time. And I'm using these words because this is all about experience. It's not about knowledge. And I also am personifying big mind and small mind, you know, for the sake of being able to explain something. But just please know that these are just words I'm using so that I can convey an idea. There is no big mind and no small mind. There's no divided mind. There's no undivided mind. It's just mind. Whatever Buddha nature is, whatever this mind is or isn't, goes way beyond any dualistic concepts or words that I've used in this talk. So I'm going to end with that. And I'm just curious if anybody has any question or comment or experience they would like to share that's similar to this. Yeah, George?
I've been thinking about the last stanza on the first page. I don't know if you have it in front of you, but it talks about that there should be not even acceptance nor rejection, is the line. And so that makes me think if there's either, I was thinking about it all along in terms of just total acceptance. But I think what it's saying there is that even the concept of acceptance is a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you left with? You're just left with awareness, it seems to me. That if you're not even accepting something, you're just, I can see where you're just turning off your discriminating mind.
You're just there.
You're just there. But what that runs into a wall for me is, as a human being in the 21st century, where I have to wake up in the morning and I have to take care of my children and go to work, I feel that space and that awareness when I'm on the cushion. And I'm aware of it conceptually during my day to day. But it's the reality, what you were describing, you were sitting, I assume, a passenger in the car.
Correct.
No. But you're a passenger in the car, which is a great metaphor. But what if you have to drive?
Okay. So George is saying, well, I'm explaining this as a passenger in the car, what if you have to drive? Well, if you have to drive, you're just driving.
Mm-hmm.
Your emptiness driving. We are always empty, but our discriminating mind jumps in and starts to conjure up memories or imagination or thinking of the future, planning. If you're just driving, you're paying attention, you're in the moment, and you see the exit. You don't pass by it because you were daydreaming. So you're really there. Now, the other question George is asking about, the last stanza here, I'm not going to waste time trying to find the stanza, but basically he's saying neither accept nor reject. And he's thinking, well, I should be accepting everything all the time. In Buddhism, you can't, that's not Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Buddhism has no fixed things like that. Buddhism says, well, in this situation, maybe you need to choose whether you're going to reject or accept this, right? Because you're always in the moment paying attention. You're just not following some guidelines blindly. You're paying attention in the moment, okay? But the other thing I wanted to say about that is, if you're neither rejecting or accepting, you are in the mind of equanimity. And that's something that we don't know very much about, because we're always in the process of making up our minds. And we want to know, right? But the thing is, now, I don't want anybody to get confused here. When you're going to work and you're living and you're doing your jobs and you're making decisions, and you have to accept or reject, or you have to tell your boss, well, this isn't going to work and why, and all those kinds of things, we're not talking about that kind of discursive thinking. I mean, that kind of thinking would be wisdom, because you're trying to help an organization move along in a positive and beneficial way for everybody. Okay, that would be wisdom, okay, to use your mind that way. What is not wisdom is to say, I'm one with everybody, but not that guy. He's not the right political party. Or, I'm one with everybody, but not her. She's brown. Mm-mm. These are illogical things. They're illogical. We have opinions about people, events. We have opinions about everything, and we have preferences. We do, and we could acknowledge it, that we have these preferences and opinions. But it's, what is it that you're doing with this? What are you doing? Is it benefiting anybody? Is it benefiting me to reject people? No. How can I reject them? And literally, I can't reject them. They're in my consciousness. They're in my awareness. They're not going anywhere. You can't really reject anybody. You know, they're in your mind. So it's a fantasy. It's an illusion that you can reject anybody. But what good does that do? It just makes for more separation in the world. You know. And, you know, a lot of our politicians, I just want to scream, because on both sides of the aisle, it's just ridiculous how people condemn each other and cancel culture each other. And, you know, I just don't remember any time in my life of experiencing these kinds of things. You know, and it's very disconcerting, because it's all based on separation and who's better. And we might as well be animals in the jungle, you know, feeding off of each other. To me, there has been no evolution in humanity. I think we're going backwards sometimes. But, you know, you could read stuff that the Romans wrote and they would say the same things, you know. You know, you go back and you say, well, have we evolved? You know, are we evolving as human beings? We have this great gift of consciousness. You know, we have this great gift to have religions where people look to something more, something beyond, you know, the basics of life. And yet we still seem to create separation all over the place. So I don't know, maybe it's our animal instinct. I don't really know about that, but. Does anybody else have any questions? I have a question for you guys. Does anybody here have a mindfulness practice that they do on a regular basis? Like, Peter, you do?
Sitting.
Okay, but that, I don't mean sitting. I mean a mindfulness practice in terms of actually doing something like emptiness chopping, emptiness folding the laundry, emptiness painting a room, emptiness cleaning the windows, emptiness walking the dog.
I've been doing a lot of that recently.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been acutely aware of, I'm torturing myself with recently.
He's torturing himself. Did you hear that?
Is the passage of time.
Oh, the passage of time. Oh, my.
We live, we die,
yeah.
Time passes.
Yeah.
A dear friend of mine died yesterday. Mm. My wife died 8 months ago. I've always kept a wildlife calendar on the wall of my bedroom in a house in Pennsylvania. And for 22 years, every month I'd go there and I'd turn the page to the next month. It's like an image of those old prison movies where the leaves of the calendar fly off into space. And finally, last month I looked at it, I said, I can't do this anymore. I got rid of it, I took it down. I put a picture up there. And I've come to feel recently that, you know, we think of time passing, we think of the universe being, 14 billion years old. Recently, I've just had a sense that there is no passage of time. There's only this moment.
Mm.
There's only an eternal present moment. That's all we have.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah. That's what I've been experiencing.
So Peter's saying that the passage of, did you hear him? Do I need to repeat what he said? You heard him. Okay. All right. Good. Yeah. Because the only moment there is right now. And now. So in Buddhism, like the word eternal, they don't use that word a lot, you know. But even though the impermanence is never ending, they don't use the word eternal very much. You know, I don't know why exactly, but yeah. You could spend, one day I spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I had a lot of things I had to cook or do or whatever. And normally I would be frustrated and I just would want to hurry up and do everything and just get it done, right? But I've learned over time now, because I do a lot of mindfulness practices at home, and mindfulness practices are really important, because It's one thing to sit on the cushion. It's another thing to be emptiness doing something. You know, it's just like meditation. Thoughts come in and out, but then you stay with it. You stay with it. You stay with it. You stay. We keep coming back. You keep coming back. You're training your mind. You're training your mind to empty itself out when you do that. And it's important that you do, because we want to live our lives emptier so that we don't react, you know, so we can make a decision. Do I need to reject or accept this? Or can I have this moment where I don't have to do anything? We can only do that when we have emptiness in our lives. And the only way that you can cultivate it is by doing some practice at home. But now what was I going to say then next? Well, we're talking about time, right?
Eternal moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So in the I just, instead of doing it my own, I've been learning to just, oh, this is in front of me right now. I'm going to just do this. Oh, this is in front of me right now. I'm going to do this. And at the end of the day, I don't feel like I used to feel. I used to feel like, oh my God, I did so much stuff today. I'm so tired. But I feel like it's a great day. Why? I had stillness in all that movement. You know, and I look back and I'm like, I don't even think I did anything. I accomplished a lot, but there was no effort. You know what I mean? There was no back and forth that I wanted to do. It was just, I just took everything one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. I've been doing that a lot lately. It's really helpful. It really is helpful. Even if you can find one little thing that you could do like that, do it.
Is that what animals do, though? They just live in the moment.
They're always in samadhi.
We're talking about the, you know, how we evolve, but it sounds like going back to what they do, which is just
live. Right. Animals just live. They just eat, they just shit, they just drink water, and that's it. Yeah. And eat each other.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they say in Buddhism, animals are always in samadhi because they're always clear. But they don't have brains like we do. So we have to work harder to clear, you know, to become clear. You clear yourself out so you can become clear. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.